This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello. Oh, I love the awkward bit where I have to wait for a comment. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Green and White, brought to you by Argyle Life. Plymouth Argyle ventured up to Ewood Park with new coach Stephen Ireland in tow. A midweek disaster class at Sheffield Wednesday was followed up with a 1-1 draw with 71% possession against 10 men belonging to a very woeful Blackburn Rovers side. John Eustace was a name touted by many as a potential replacement to Stephen Schumacher, and on the basis of yesterday's performance, I'm not sure he'd even be an upgrade on Ian Foster. As mentioned, Argyle dominated every stat by the goals and the red cards column, and yet some fans still aren't satisfied. Joining me tonight to dissect the draw, I'll go back in clockwise order. John Allsop, how's things? And I noticed that there's no curtains on display today.
Yeah, I had to actually, my curtains were so embarrassed, I had to burn them. Thank you for everyone who had nice things to say about my curtains in the week. They actually weren't my curtains because I was in a cottage not belonging to me. I did notice that you said, I hate to bring up full wrong first names, Stephen Ireland as our new coach. I believe Stephen Ireland was the one-time Manchester City winger who famously pretended that his gran had died out of international duty, if anyone remembers that one, from back in the day. I think it's Simon.
Yeah, it is Simon. Adam, how's things?
I followed my wonderful run of only coming on after a win to coming on after a devastating defeat, and now I've got something in between. So I really am the sort of man that can cover all bases, it would seem.
Nice.
A devastating draw.
You probably go with that.
Yeah. And the new star of Mr. Pieface's new Life of Pie YouTube channel, Sound Down, how's things? I saw another appearance.
Yeah, I'm okay. I certainly wouldn't presume to call myself the star, but I'm a valued member of the supporting cast, I think, on Pie's new channel.
I would call you the star. As we know, from that vlog, you were there at Ewood Park alongside us. Do you want to give us your match run through?
Yeah, bit of a tough one to analyse, in truth. I don't think it was all good or all bad. I think it's very easy to get sucked into giving a sort of hyperbolic opinion for, good content and that kind of thing. But I think really it was one of those games where it was a bit in the middle. There was certainly some good.
So I'm going to have to stop you there. We don't do good content around here. We just do content. There's no good.
Well, yeah, there we go then.
We were praised as very objective yesterday, actually, Aaron, by a valued listener, which normally is code for, I think you chat a lot of shit, but are very fair about it. Anyway.
Yeah. Actually, on that, really quickly, sorry, Sam, to step over you again. I still find it absolutely mad when people come up to us in the ground. There was three different people yesterday, and they like say that they like the pod. That blows my mind because we genuinely do chat some rubbish at times. But appreciate it. Thank you. Go on, Sam. I'll stop butting in.
Yeah, it is great when that happens. Genuinely, I think there were... I'm somewhere in the middle in my view. I think there were some good points about it, for sure. I absolutely think the energy, the sort of daringness, the attacking intent was tenfold better than in many other games. I think we did have a go at them quite strongly. I think certainly the sort of maybe 15 minutes before halftime and 15 minutes just after halftime, we really banged on the door a lot and should have scored probably more than one in that time. And look, I would be being churlish if I didn't give any credit for that, because I have often said that losing or failing to win is one thing, but having no heart is one other. And I don't think that was the performance without heart. I think it was a much better performance in that regard, but I do still have some issues with it. I have issues with the fact that we were still cut open a bit defensively. Obviously, they had their goal. They had another very good chance that they just put wide from one-on-one. I think they also had a chance just after it. We equalised that Cooper then saved well. So that was a concern. There is still that nagging doubt in my mind of, well, you know, was the performance actually better, or was it just that Blackburn were worse? Was it the fact of that they went 1-0 up and they sat in and invited us onto them? And I think there's some truth to that. So I think whilst it is improved, because let's be honest, Sheffield Wednesday were also poor and sat back and we didn't look as good at Hillsborough as we did at Ewood Park. There is that concern. And the third slight caveat and area for concern is that for all, obviously, the fact that we were very good going up to 1-1, after we did equalise, our standard dropped right off again. Not necessarily lack of intensity as such, but I still think we were trying, but we completely lost our heads so many times. Everybody was trying to play the hero ball. Everyone was trying to do something amazing that was going to get on the highlights reel. Nobody, apart from Forshaw and at times Randall, were just doing the sensible thing, making a simple pass and doing good build-up play, because that was what had worked so bloody well up to 1-1. But after 1-1, we just sort of abandoned doing that, which I found very frustrating. And of course, the fourth thing, and this is the final thing as I'll wrap up, is that for all the fact it was a better performance, we still couldn't find a way to win against a very poor Blackburn side with 10 men, which is concerning, I have to say. So better, still a long way to go, would be my conclusion.
Go on, John, follow it up.
Well, I hate to disappoint Zach Brown in the comments, who has taken time out of managing the McLaren F1 team to see Sam and I disagree. There we go. There's the comment coming up. But I actually don't really disagree with Sam for once about this. I was, as Aaron will attest, furious coming out of the ground, really, really frustrated. Did not feel it was a good performance at all. I think my opinion on it would be...
The worst bit is, John, is that you're very loud about it. I'm not.
Why is that bad?
No. Just everybody knows. Not just me. Can
anybody in a 5-mile vicinity probably heard it as well. I think is what Aaron's getting at there, John.
Exactly.
I like to try and get some nibbles from home fans who overhear it, which you sometimes do. I'll always have a fond memory for the Birmingham fan who laughed at me and said, "We're third in the league after we lost there 2-1. And how's that working out for you?" After I said they were not very good. I was very, very frustrated after the game. You know, I've seen a lot of commentary online to the effect that we played really well yesterday and we're very unlucky. And after the game, I certainly just didn't really agree with that at all. I felt we were pretty poor, felt it had been a dreadful game of football, and basically we'd looked like the better side, mostly because Blackburn were, I think, the worst team we've played all season. I haven't been to every single game. Maybe there'll be some disagreements with that, but especially given how QPR and Sheffield Wednesday have ticked up in form, you know, you could only really make the case that Rotherham, I think, are a worse side than Blackburn in the league at the moment, in my opinion. And Rotherham obviously did quite well when they came down to Home Park, a game that I watched from abroad on TV. So, I thought Blackburn were very, very poor, and they still could very easily have beaten us. You know, if they'd scored a second goal, instead of hitting the crossbar, if they had not had a red card, which obviously was a correct red card, you know, it could have been a different game. Felt actually kind of like they were doing a little bit of a job on us at 1-0, although Sam will disagree with that because he thinks doing a job in football entails giving up no chances, no territory whatsoever. And obviously they did give us quite a few chances, so maybe it's a legitimate point to say they weren't doing a job. But, you know, we were pretty laboured, I thought. We had a pretty good spell in either half, I thought. But I think Sam's right that after we scored the goal, you really wanted us there. You know, we had Blackburn on the rack. It was, you know, it was there for the taking, and it just felt like, I don't want to say we didn't go for it in terms of like a lack of effort or a lack of application, but the lack of quality was so obvious. You know, we just really, really struggled to put together incisive attacking moves. And after the, yeah, after the goal, can't think of too many chances we've really had to actually, you know, for all the chances we've missed overall in the game, they were mostly at 1-0 rather than 1-1. Yeah, there are caveats to this. You know, I think it was refreshing to see Foster seemingly take in the sense, I don't know if it was, obviously he said he doesn't read certain websites well, giving a very good impression that he does actually read certain websites by characterizing the commentary on them as abuse. But seemingly doesn't listen to the fans. So maybe his team selection wasn't a response to fan sentiment, but it was a very good team selection, I thought. A lot more attacking intent about it. We played with more attacking intent, which was good. Yeah, and obviously playing against 10 men can be difficult, as I think we have found a couple of times this season. We found that against Rotherham, I think, in the home game. It wasn't completely straightforward after they had a man sent off. Obviously, when we went to QPR and ourselves had a player sent off, they struggled to break us down. So I don't want to say that, you know, you should be scoring two or three or four goals when you have a man advantage in a football match. Sometimes it doesn't work like that. And I guess there's a case to say maybe that we actually looked a bit more fluid at what, you know, at 11 versus 11 than 11 v 10. You know, that being said, obviously it was a huge chance to pick up 3 points, and it was very, very frustrating that we weren't able to do it. And for me, obviously, as I said yesterday, very frustrated coming out of the ground. I think having calmed down and slept on it, I'm less angry and frustrated with it, and more able to see it as a step in the right direction. But I also still stand by the fact that I think it was a much poorer performance than the vein of online commentary saying, well, we played brilliantly and just didn't take our chances, would have you suggest. I think it was a lot more labored, a lot more predictable than that. Ultimately, sorry, Zach, agree with Sam on this one, that I think it's a step in the right direction, but there's an awful, awful long way to go to, you know, to get to a point where we're winning football matches again, I think.
Yeah, Adam,
based on that performance, to be clear.
Adam, I'll give you a chance to respond to some of the abuse that you're getting from Zach in the comments in a minute. I'm just going to do a big, long, talky bit. The full-time thought, one of the poshest Argyle fans' names I've ever come across, Jonathan Windsor Huxham, said, we didn't lose. That's a massive bonus. MW10 on the score sheet again. We played some great football. We were just unlucky. Chris George, there are matches we have to win, but we take the point and move on to the next. That's brilliant. Switching tabs and the tweet disappears. Argyle memes, very poor up front today, or yesterday. I'd like to say it was a more positive performance, but in fact, the Blackburn were so rubbish, I'm going to substitute that word, only serves to highlight how poor we were not to come away with a win. Argyle Flyer felt like our away performances at the start of the season. We just weren't clinical enough. Really don't know where to go from here. Lee Palmer, we wanted more attacking display and we got it, yet some fans are still never happy. Even when there are positives, we can't see them as we don't want to see them. One more point on the board. And I'm guessing that the squad will be more positive after that. And we can take that into the Preston game. I'm sure we'll move on to the Preston game in a bit. PASC displays, frustrating afternoon, cannot fault the lads or the commitment from the effort. Play like that for the rest of the season, plus take some of the chances we missed today and we'll be fine. One more then, Ryan, we didn't win against arguably the biggest load of dross I've ever seen, and they only had 10 men. Said that last week, if he didn't get 6 points this week, he has to go. We got one. Ta-ta. Adam, we'll shift Pasotti corner. I think I've spoken enough. James Smith asks, have we forgotten how valuable an away point is, especially for us this season?
Yeah, maybe. But I think when you're looking at the situation, who you're playing, how you're playing, I think that far, far more likely people are walking out the ground thinking it's 2 points dropped rather than a point gained. Now, I don't want to be boring, but I feel like I agree with a lot of what's been said so far. If you look at the way that we've gone about the game, admittedly, look at any stat that you can think of, we deserve to win the game. But a lot of things can be true at the same time. We're the better team, yes. We deserve to win the game, yes, I'd argue so, but we didn't. And I think the stats themselves and the fact that we're on top a lot of the time can be caveated in a lot of ways. Think game state's an obvious example. Blackburn took the lead in that game after 7 minutes and were leading for the vast majority of the game. And were more than happy to sit back and invite pressure. Now, they weren't very good at it because of the number of chances that, that they gave up. But it would be a bit disappointing if, being behind in the game, we weren't the side actually trying to take the game to them and trying to create chances to get ourselves on level terms. Obviously, as well, you look at the fact that they're down to 10 men for the vast majority of the second half. I mean, yeah, it can be more difficult to play against 10 men. We've seen it in the past. We've seen it in the other way too, particularly. But yeah, in those circumstances, you still expect to be on top. You don't necessarily expect to score a couple of goals when that's happening, but you expect to be the team on top. So can we read a lot into the fact that we've got the stats there? I don't know. And I think particularly when you consider that Blackburn were so bad. I mean, considering the way that they've played, the way that the run of form that they're on, and the run of fixtures that they've got left. I mean, arguably, that's the biggest positive to take from yesterday. Is that if Blackburn play as well as they did yesterday for the final few games of the season, they will go down in 23rd. And that's one more game that we don't, or one more place rather, we don't have to worry about. So, you know, it's I can understand why somebody would come out of that game and think, it's really disappointing that we haven't won. It's really disappointing, and the away point isn't good enough. With that being said, I don't then think, or at least from my end, that we've crossed the threshold yet of saying that must mean we need to change head coach. Now, if you were going into this game on the back of Sheffield Wednesday and you already wanted Ian Foster to be dismissed, then I can completely understand why you'd think coming out of that game and still failing to win is enough to say it's time to go. If you're like me and you're thinking we want to give him the Blackburn game to try and prove himself. Now, okay, we've not won that game, but I think there was enough there, just enough there, to suggest that that it's worth going forward at least until the international break, at least another game against Preston to see what he can do. It's, I mean, I'm not a hardliner on this. If I come off air today and later on I see there's a corner flag on the social networks, what have you, and Foster's dismissed and we've got someone else in from Monday morning, I'm going to sleep just as soundly tonight as I would have otherwise. But for me, I think we've done as well. I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with going to Foster and saying this next game's important, maybe it's win or bust. Because that focuses the mind in two ways. One, it actually forces him to be attacking, be on the front foot and try and make us the better side because he knows his job is on the line. And two, it gives us a fair bit of certainty afterwards because I think one of the things that I enjoyed the most coming into this game was the fact that it felt like something had to give. Either we'd finally get that win on the board and be happy, or we'd be completely outplayed and we'd know exactly what to do with the manager. As it happens, nothing's given. And we are in exactly the same position as we were a few days ago with a good performance and no win. So, you know, where do we go from here? I think it we need to focus the mind, make sure Saturday is treated as an absolute must-win game. And if we see the same again and we're not confident, then we've got an international break to sort it out. That was long-winded. The question was about an away point. I mean, the away point would look nice if we get a win next Saturday, but long way to go.
Yeah, we'll get on to next Saturday and our meeting with Mr. Lowe later on. Just going back to some of the comments that we've had then. Kobe Budge, the biggest negative for me is that 1 point and one goal from two games against teams below us in the league is a really poor return. The biggest positive, though, is that the players definitely look to be playing for Foster yesterday. I don't know how to say your username. The Caster. We'll go with that. We'll take that in the current situation. A win would have been brilliant, but very good and spirited performance with attacking intent was just the tonic. Foster did well today and it wasn't his fault we didn't take our chances. Tavi Green, much more positive performance. Lovely to see Cooper bowling the ball out quickly again. I'm glad Bundu is fully fit now as he'll improve. He'll be important for the run-in. Again, maybe if I slow down and read properly, I'll be able to talk properly. A few negatives like the finishing and Mumba getting his usual yellow. But if we play like that for the remaining games, we'll be okay, I reckon. At least we'll go down swinging. That was Pasotti corner covered off. We've got quite a few questions on individuals. But before we do that, before we get into our own positives and negatives, just a word on our opposition. John, Adam's already touched on it, but you were gushing in your praise for both Blackburn Rovers and John Eustace at full time, using superlatives that I very rarely hear you say, even with your incredibly positive outlook on life. What did you make of yesterday's opponents?
Well, you know, everyone will know who's a regular listener that I was a huge fan of John Eustace's predecessor, Jon Dale Thomason, a man about whom I certainly never used the word fraud or certain more strong words beginning with the letter C to describe him. I don't think I ever recall having done that. And certainly, you know, I felt that his comments about Niall Ennis and the facilities at Home Park were totally fair and justified and not at all disproven as complete horseshit by subsequent events and how much Niall Ennis featured for them. And then the process by which they failed to sign a striker from the MLS to replace Niall Ennis, having sanctioned his departure on transfer deadline day because they clicked save rather than send on the official paperwork. So I've always thought Blackburn were an extremely well-run club who appoint, you know, very good managers and not at all a club that are fouling up the second division of English football, being absolutely turgid and mediocre year after year, despite having some actually pretty good individual players. Yeah, I thought they were terrible. I thought they were absolutely terrible. They're certainly the worst side I've seen us play this season. I think that Eustace is a manager who I respect, obviously on the basis of the job he did at Birmingham, as I think was pretty much the case, you know, across fans of the Championship. I think it was widely regarded that his stock was very high after keeping them up against expectations last season. And obviously, you know, being sacked for the Wayne Rooney disaster class that followed, I think got him a lot of sympathy. And obviously, you know, there are certain rumours that he was in the final two or three, you know, interviewees to get the job here when we eventually appointed Foster. And I think there are those, probably myself included, at the time who would have, you know, maybe had him as one of our preferred candidates. But I think I also do remember saying at the time in some sort of private conversation that there is a chance, you know, it's not a hire without risk. Like, obviously, he has more Championship managerial experience than Ian Foster, but he's also done one job, and sometimes managers do very well in one job, and sometimes you know, then go and do poorly in a different job. And it might be a case the one very good job comes to look like a complete outlier in an otherwise disappointing career. It can just be that, you know, a manager suits certain clubs less than others and do a great job sometimes and a bad job other times, and that doesn't necessarily make them a bad manager. It just means that they're not necessarily the type of great manager who can kind of walk into any circumstance and get results. You know, like a Neil Warnock figure who I think actually his most recent spell at Aberdeen has been pretty bad, but generally speaking, when Warnock comes into a club, he improves it, at least, you know, in terms of results. So I don't necessarily want to write off Eustace as a manager, but I mean, their form under him is very concerning if you're a Blackburn Rovers fan. I mean, it's much worse than our form under Foster. I think as with Foster, you know, transitioning from Schumacher, there's probably a stylistic thing going on, right? I mean, Thomason likes to play, by all accounts, quite open football. I think Eustace is a much more pragmatic manager, which isn't to say an inherently negative one, but I think some of these teams are quite a lot more solid and sort of rely on fine margins in games a bit more. So maybe there's that. But I thought there was a complete lack of cohesion. I thought they defended very poorly. I thought they looked dangerous going forward. Obviously, they do have Sami Schmodics, who's the top scorer in the league, and is so for a reason. Obviously, he's a very fine finisher, as we saw early on in the game. But I thought, you know, even their sort of other attacking players who have quite good reputations, Sam Gallagher, for instance, did nothing. They looked very low on confidence. Again, complete lack of cohesion in terms of passing the ball around. Like I said earlier, I'd be very, very concerned if I was a supporter of them. I think they've hit a very bad run of form at the worst time possible. Again, do have a couple of players who any team in that relegation fight would like to have, certainly, so they have a chance always of you know, those players creating a moment of magic and lifting themselves out of it. But whether it's a bad mix of manager and club, or there's just a stylistic transition that isn't quite working, or the squad is lacking in depth in key areas, I thought they were as poor a team as we have played this season, and I would be worried if I were them.
Yeah, we'll get on to the questions about individuals, but before that, Sam, 2 p.m. when that team selection dropped. We'd had a few tequila roses, but bar the alcohol inducement. We thought that Ian Foster basically nailed it, didn't we? We thought that team selection looked pretty nailed on.
Yeah, I think we did both agree that it looked a much better team. Obviously, we were all in, those of us who were in the pub, very happy that Cooper was starting. Happy to see Bundu given the go. I'm not sure that Bundu is the answer to all our ills, but he has shown some directness and some energy in recent games that I think would have been welcome. And indeed was welcome, despite having fairly poor end product for some of the game. So, yeah, I think we were happy about both of that. And I think both of those things turned out that we were right to be happy. I still think that it would have been good to see four at the back. Obviously, I know that we did then change to that, didn't we, during the game? I'm sure we'll come on to that in a later question, maybe. But, yeah, I think as far as a 3-4-3 lineup goes, That was a good 3-4-3. Obviously Galloway was rested. And so obviously we lined up with Gibson on the left of the back three. And obviously Phillips in the middle with Pleggy out on the right. I think we were fairly happy. There may have been one or two differentials I would have made, but I think we were happy. And the fact of Cooper, and I'm sure there'll be again a specific question about him. So yeah, the Cooper helped us play out better, and I think the team selection being better contributed towards what was a better performance, yeah.
And that rolls perfectly into the question for Adam from Michael Charlotte, who asks, no one can argue that it was right to bring in Coops, can they? His distribution was so much quicker. Can you argue, Adam?
I certainly can't argue, no. I think I'd like to see... like to see it happen again in a game where we're not playing against a team that is sticking to it, making that distribution easy. It was a lot of the balls he did play, or a lot of the throws he did make, were the easy choices. But then I guess you can't prove that Hazard would have done the same. You know, it was certainly better. And I think it goes back to a lot of what we were discussing last week in terms of, do we want to switch in? Do we want to switch back? I mean, I've sat on this podcast and praised Connor Hazard a fair amount, I'd say. I'd like to think I fought his corner, and I'd like to think if he's ever watched, he'd appreciate that. But regardless, Cooper's always been the better keeper. And having him available and not putting him in, particularly with the way the games were going, and with every game that passed, seemed like a more and more baffling decision. So, yeah, it was really refreshing to see him in yesterday. He's just statistically outperforms Hazard, even in Hazard's strong areas, which, as I say, are not bad by any stretch. And yeah, yesterday, the distribution, it may have gone into the wider part of intent more than anything else. The way that he was getting the ball forward quickly almost encouraged me. And based on no point of fact, it was just a feeling, it encouraged me that he was part of a team that wanted to get the ball forward more and wanted to do it quickly. And the focus was much more on getting the ball forward rather than holding it and just trying to soak up pressure. So, yeah, no arguments from me. I was delighted to see him back, and hopefully his knees are all fixed and we can have him now for the rest of the run.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, on Johnny's question there, I'd happily do that. I'd happily let somebody else stand next to Sam instead of me and John. That'd be lovely.
Yeah, we'll pay you, actually. No need to buy raffle tickets.
I need to raffle. We'll happily make a donation to charity or something. I'm sure that can be sorted out. Not a problem.
The chairs for Janna's Foundation, which is a cause very close to my heart.
Oh, class. We can't get through a pod now without a comment about Sam's standing, which is brilliant. Continuing on with individuals, John, obviously 10 yellows now for Mumba, which sees him get a 2-game ban, which means he'll miss out on his return to Fortress Carrow Road. Oh, sorry, Carrow Road. It's only Fortress Carrow Road when I'm talking to my actual Norwich friends. Lee Palmer's asked, for those in the ground, general feeling about Mumba's performance? I thought he was much better yesterday.
Yeah, I thought he was lively. I mean, the yellow card frustrated me because if I remember correctly, and Sam might correct me on this, or you might, it sort of came from a mistake of his own making, and then he kind of had to hold the player down as he was running away. I wouldn't say had to. I mean, obviously didn't have to do that, but he obviously felt like he had to. Probably was the right thing to do. But and it just seems like the sort of thing that he does too often. I mean, even in League One, he picked up quite a lot of yellow cards, if I remember correctly. None of which were actually for playing basketball at Barnsley away twice, which remains one of my favourite Ballymumba moments, if anyone remembers that, where he blatantly used his hand to control the ball on several occasions and the ref just didn't see it. He's always had that in him. And I think it just speaks to this season what's frustrated me about his performances. You know, I think obviously there has been a high weight of expectation on him given the transfer fee that we paid for him, given how good he was last year. And I think some of the criticism of him has been a bit over the top at times. But it just seems like he has these lapses in concentration that are persistent. Obviously, Coventry was a game where he gave the ball away at the end of the pitch where we were trying to keep it and then conceded a free kick right outside his own box like 30 seconds later and we conceded. That was kind of one example of a game in which I thought he played, you know, lively and had a good contribution, but then did that. And I guess yesterday, obviously, it wasn't as costly by any means, but it is costly in the sense that he's now banned for 2 games. So that part of it remains frustrating to me. That being said, you know, I felt that he was lively. I think he was being played out of position for, you know, why break the habit of an entire season, I guess. But someone who was an excellent left wing back for us last season, who's barely got a sniff in that position. Being played out of position, felt he did some nice kind of movements on the ball. It probably wouldn't have been one of my standout players from the game, but I felt he was fine. A shame that we'll miss the Norwich game. Although maybe after giving away a penalty in the last time we played Norwich. Hernandez won't get to scream in his face this time. Unless he's in the stands or something.
Yeah. Good times. Good times, that 6-2 win over Norwich City. Staying on with individuals. Michael Sharlock again, Sam. Will Mikel Miller ever make the right decision when he gets to the end of his dribble? I mean, it was a bit of confusion in our group chat that Mikel Miller was voted man of the match, wasn't
there? Yeah, look, when Pi was on the other night, we had a bit of a debate about Miller. I'm trying to see him more positively. I'm trying to understand what he does well, and there are some things, namely he does dribble well. And he does sometimes get us that extra 10 to 15 yards up the pitch with his dribbling that maybe others wouldn't. And I think that is legitimately a good thing he does well. But I think that's about where it ends, in all honesty. When he does get to the end of the run, his decision-making and his product is really poor at times, in my opinion. Really poor. His crosses are often overhit. People are saying about how, you know, our attackers just don't get on the end of his crosses. And I'm sure there's been one or two occasions in recent games where he's put in a decent ball and we just haven't quite gotten the end of it. But I think those are far outweighed by the occasions where a cross has been overhit, in all honesty. And, there's been a few times we just sort of let the ball out for a throw-in or he's sort of ran into a bit of a cul-de-sac and tried to find the pass and just not executed it. None of this is to absolutely slaughter him. I want us to be constructive. I don't want us to just become one of those podcasts that just comes on and absolutely slaughters players, you know, to get viral clips or anything like that. Because I don't think that's what we're about. But I'm only sort of doing it in response to the fact that I think everyone is seeing something that I'm seemingly not seeing. And there is this perception that he's one of our best players. And in all honesty, I really don't believe that's the case at all with Miller. I think he does have some good attributes in terms of ball progression, but often very, very wasteful when he does get up there, which is a big problem in all truth. So would I start him in the next game? I think I probably would, because Miller is, I think my first choice, and everyone's available, would be Sorinola on the right and Mumba on the left. But I think I probably would start Miller just because of the fact of, if not, it's Sousa, who seems to have been completely dropped like a hot potato after a couple of very poor performances. That strikes me as a bit of a signing that was made on recruitment data and analysis and all this. And when we've actually got him on the training ground, we realise he's not up to it. It's the sense I get there of what's happened. I could be wrong, but Sousa seems to be well out of favour. So, yeah, on that logic, I probably would start Miller in the next game. But I don't think he was man of the match, and I don't think he has been man of the match very often this season at all.
What was what was frustrating, Sam, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, is that he played a great part for the goal. And it was, and you know, he got the ball in a position from which he seems to just sort of slash across the box as hard as he can and hope it, you know, hits someone like the Coventry centre back the other week and bounces in, or sort of bounces to one of our players, which I think is just a terrible tactic at this level. I don't think you can just be aimlessly thrashing balls into the box at full speed and hoping it gets a lucky bounce or whatever. I think you need much more finesse than that. And that is a frustration that I have with him as well. But it looked like he was going to do that for the build up to our goal. And instead he just cut a really nice ball back into the path of Divine that was really finessed, lovely kind of pick out, very intentional. So I think he's got the quality to be able to do that for sure. And it's just a bit frustrating to me that his delivery is so kind of kamikaze quite a lot of the time. But yes, I agree. I agree with Sam on Miller generally. I was also fairly perplexed that he was man of the match yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, my internet, I don't think my internet's that bad. I think I just keep cutting out because I don't really want to watch you.
What's that, mate? You sound like you're in a tunnel. Can you hear me? Hello? Oh,
John, you are a funny man, aren't you? You're a funny bloke. No, I see why people tune in. Nearly 600 in tonight, which is brilliant. Thank you. Continue to comment and we'll get around to some of your questions in a minute. We'll get back to the social ones. Adam, again, more on the individuals, but this one's a bit more stylistic. Gavin Jones, friend of the pod and Plymouth cricketing finest, says, midfield, are Forshaw and Houghton just a bit too samey? If so, is it Randall, JB or Divine with either of them, considering they shouldn't start in the same team?
Certainly for a game like this, I completely agree. And the problem I think we had yesterday with them being too samey is it meant in transitions, we were really struggling for a lot of it. And I think certainly it contributed a fair bit to the number of counterattacks that we saw against us. As I recall, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the chance where Sigurdsson's hit the post or bar or angle or whatever the cliche is come directly from Forshaw being nutmegged in midfield and gone directly forward, and there's just so much space behind them. I think that the comment is absolutely right, because they're both good players in their own right, but if you're going to play the sort of game where you're playing it into the spaces for Ryan Hardy to chase, which, you know, it did work on a couple of occasions, the first time where he got in and the second time when Bundu played a lovely little ball that ended up with McFadden being sent off. That can work. But to play that and then bypass the midfield when your midfielders are two of the more technical players rather than your physical players or your all-rounders or what have you, means that when you lose it and when you've got that transition, it's really easy to counter against. And that particularly, you know, I know the shape was very different between when we got the equaliser and when they were down to 10 men, but the fact that they were still able to counter at that point, I think that's probably, and I know we all generally thought, well, if you're going to play that same shape and not go to a back four, that is probably the right selection. But I think that was the one part of the selection that we didn't get quite right, is not having somebody there in midfield that would be able to not necessarily go box to box, but be able to transition in a much more efficient way than Houghton or Forshaw can. They are both good players in their own right, as I'd say, but I don't think at the moment, based on the evidence, that they can play together, and they certainly can't play together when we're in a game where the opposition are actively planning to counter on us, because it's where we struggle. So who comes in? I mean, I think Randall would be my choice, but that's because, you know, I've I've come on this podcast and I've spent every podcast praising Adam Randall, so I'm going to continue to do so. But JB is a reasonable call, and particularly I think Divine yesterday, I think, showed a lot of what he can do. Again, much like I said with Cooper's distribution, I'd like to see him in that sort of role when we're not against a team that's down to 10 men and is sitting deep. But sure, he certainly put himself in the conversation yesterday. So any one of those three alongside any one of those two, if we're going to go to the shape, is probably fine. And I think that that Randall's probably the way to go. And just appreciate the comment on the headphones. They're actually from the government. And if you're watching from the government, you're not allowed them back. So they're all mine.
Oh, nice. We don't get much from the government nowadays. So the fact that you've got yourself a set of headphones is lovely. John, I know you've already touched on it in your opening gambit, but I'm just going to go back on it. Last question on individuals, I think, unless there's some really good ones in the comments that Joe has been in the background starring for me to come to later. Richard Francis has asked, can you see Ryan Hardy making the step up to international football as he's missed golden chances that international players usually take? A bit wasteful yesterday.
I wanted to say just very quickly, I thought Forshaw was excellent yesterday in answer to the previous question, particularly as the game wore on and they had 10 men. I thought he was, as I think Sam mentioned earlier, one of the only ones for us who was actually kind of getting his head up and playing kind of measured, sensible football that still had a kind of attacking orientation to it. I think he is someone who is so clear that he's played at a higher level than most of our squad. And he has been a big miss, I think, in that run of games where we did quite poorly. I think against some of those bigger teams, having him kind of there to just put his foot on the ball and calm us down at key moments would have been really beneficial. So to come on to the question on Hardy, it's a point of pride that I pay less than no attention to the Scottish international setup whatsoever. So I have no idea really like what the kind of comparison point would be. Lyndon Dykes, does he still start for Scotland?
I expect it better from you, John. I expect it better from you. But usually they pick Lyndon.
Well, they've got Shea Adams as well, who's obviously a very good player.
Yeah, they've got Lyndon Dykes, Shea Adams, and Kevin Nisbet, I believe are the usual three. I know Lawrence Shankland has been getting in recently, and rightfully so.
Yeah, so I mean, those were all quite similar players, I would say. I mean, not identical players by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, Dykes is quite a unit, as is Che Adams, albeit one with a lot of quality. Nisbet, I get the same impression, although I haven't really watched a lot of Millwall this season, so I wouldn't really know. But again, yeah, so I'm not really paying attention to what the context is. Hardy would sound like he offers a different kind of option to those players in my, you know, just from kind of thinking about it rationally. But also, I think, you know, Hardy is quite a specific system player. And I think there are systems that teams, you know, and international squads could, feasibly set up that where Hardy would look very blunt, where he wouldn't be able to kind of make those penetrating runs in behind. So, you know, all this is to say that, you know, selecting an international squad is about a lot more than just who are the best players of your nationality at any one given moment. Obviously, there's favouritism that comes into it, and there's, familiarity with the international setup and who the opponents are and you know, the formation you're going to play and all the rest of it. So it's not really for me to sit here and say that he should or shouldn't get a Scotland cap on that basis. That being said, international football, even at the level practiced by Scotland, is obviously a very kind of different high-quality beast, and you have to be... you have to be pretty ruthless. And obviously one criticism we've always had of Ryan Hardy is that he does go through kind of hot spells and cold spells in front of goal. Now, I think that's been less true this season than it has in previous years, which is incredibly impressive given that he, you know, has stepped up to the championship in that time. I think he has actually worked on his consistency and been a lot more consistent. But yeah, these last few weeks are kind of getting back to the sort of like Hardy of last season, just a little bit, where you see him score, you know, an unbelievable goal against Sunderland and then very nearly score from the halfway line with a great piece of quick thinking. And you then see him score a great goal at Middlesbrough, which is just super composed. And then yesterday you see him just scuff two really presentable opportunities. One where he's lobbed it wide and the other one in the second half where he just hasn't caught it cleanly at all. And actually looking back at the replay, that one was a lot closer than I'd realized in the ground, the one that just sort of bobbles past the post. And maybe the Hardy of a few weeks ago would have just smashed that one into the bottom corner. So, Yeah, I think there is a consistency issue there in front of goal that we all know about. Obviously, he's still, you know, very much our best striker, still a hugely important member of the team. A brilliant player at this level, which I haven't just thought to say because of the comment that's just come up. No, he is genuinely a brilliant player at this level. And I was actually saying yesterday to Sam and Dan, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a very coveted player in the summer for, among other teams at this level, especially given striker.
He really was saying that, Sandro. I promise you, he's not lying.
Oh,
that,
I was,
that,
yeah.
That was a true comment that he said.
But you know, in response to the Scotland score question, I just don't know. Basically, I would obviously it would be lovely to see him get a chance, wouldn't it, as an Argyle player? But yeah, hard to say without knowing more about the way they set themselves up.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely disgusting the way he just lied to his nan, John, about what you said yesterday.
Yeah, I did say that yesterday. Sam banged me up. Sam banged me up.
No, I know you did. I'm just pulling your leg. I'm pulling your leg. Don't Even worry. As Sandra, we all love you. If nothing else, where were we? Sam, everybody's mentioned your sponsored silence, so let's get you talking. Why does it feel like we have to go 1-0 down for things to spring into life, not just on Saturday but most weeks?
Sorry, I'm just off to the Preston game after the length of John's answer there. I'm joking. In terms of the as to why we wait till we go 1-0 down, I don't think that's necessarily the case, because in the Ipswich game, we were better before going 1-0 down. And then when we went 1-0 down, we just collapsed like a pack of cards. In the Middlesbrough game, we were pretty good all game. In the Leeds game, yes, in that scenario, I would agree we started playing going after 1-0 down. And in the West Brom game, again, we were worse after going 1-0 down. So of the last sort of five games, there was two where we were better after going 1-0 down. Two where we were worse. Oh, Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah, okay, I forgot that one. But again, in that one, we were a little bit better after going 1-0 down, but still not great. So of the last, you know, few games, there have been some where we've been better after going 1-0 down, but there have been nearly as many, if not as many, where we actually play worse after going behind. So I don't actually think that there's too much of a pattern there in all. I don't really agree with that comment. I think what's more of a concern is whether it's start of the game, end of the game, middle of the game. We can only really, apart from Middlesbrough, we can only really play well for certain spells of games. We don't seem to play well for the whole game, Middlesbrough being the one exception. So that is of concern for sure. We do not very often pull together full 90 performances. So that's alarming. I would want to just add a little bit to the point on Cooper, the answer that Adam gave there. I think Cooper definitely helps us hugely. Again, Hazard has done okay at times. He's had some good performances, made some good saves. But I think he really, in terms of just getting the ball out quickly, prompt distribution, command of area, Cooper's a long way above, in my opinion, a long way above. The long and medium range kicking is still to be worked on with Cooper, but then that always was the case, even at his very peak. I'm afraid I don't agree at all with the comment saying he could or certainly saying he should have done better for the goal. That shot from Smodics was right in the corner. And I've seen it described as a weak shot, which I don't really agree with either. It may not have been absolutely rifled, but it certainly wasn't trickling in. It was going in at quite a pace, I would say. So I don't agree that Cooper should have done better. I certainly don't agree that with the suggestion that Hazard, with his better reach, would have saved it, because, you know, ultimately he still probably wouldn't have gone down in time. He probably would have still been diving as it went into the net, in all honesty. Look, would Michael Cooper, in his absolute very, very best, most confident form, maybe have just got enough on it to tip it away? Possibly. But if that had have happened, we would be sort of sat here saying, oh my God, how has he saved that? It's not a save you'd expect him to make. It's a save that if he makes it, then the away end is absolutely aghast and he's cheering his name. But that should never be the expectation. I think it's very harsh on him to say he should have saved that, in my opinion. So very good game from Cooper. Look, with regards to Hardy, I think I don't really necessarily agree with John that this is the same as maybe runs last season, where he just didn't have any confidence. Because I do think that maybe that was true in yesterday's game, but it's certainly in the previous few games.
Well, thanks for putting words in my mouth that I didn't say.
Words to the effect of, I may not remember the exact wording, but what I certainly think is in the last few games, he's not really got the ball and he's not really got many openings to score just because of how poor we as a team have been and how poor we as a team have set up in many of the games. Yesterday, yes, was the one where he missed a couple of chances, but it does happen, and hopefully he'll do what Whittaker did and break Kidd's duck and get going. Any comments on Whittaker when it comes to individuals? He did get the goal, return to goal scoring form. Any objection if I say a few words on him, Aaron?
Oh, crack on, mate. I can't normally stop you talking. I don't know why tonight would be any different.
No. I think Whittaker was much, much better. Not only the goal, but also his use of the ball, his creative play was a lot better. He obviously very much helped by the fact that we were getting him on the ball more because the performance is better, for sure. But also when he did get the ball, his use of it was a bit more smarter and more creative. So credit to him. Couple of moments where he seemed to voice his opinion to other players in a way that wasn't maybe optimal. But I think that Randall seemed to get in the middle of that little spat between Whittaker and Gibson and calmed it down when they were sort of having a bit of an argument with each other. There was a bit of a moment where he had a bit of a go. I think Bundu, he also had a go at a point. So, yeah, maybe a little bit of word needed there just to keep that sort of talk to the dressing room, not necessarily whilst the ball's in play, certainly. So a little bit of... little bit of a word needed there, I think, but certainly a better performance from Whittaker and a very good performance from Cooper. And that's probably my final word on individual players for now.
Oh, that's good then. Adam, Sam references it there. Conversations in the dressing room. Sorry to bring up your mate Zach again, but he has asked, with Argyle's rumoured clearly air talks with the manager, etc. I think he means head coach. Do you think that if it actually happened, could it have been the best thing to have happened?
Yeah, Zach's going to be the death of me, I think. I think, you know, the best thing to have happened would probably be us actually beating Sheffield Wednesday. The next best thing that could have happened is that we use it as a catalyst going forward. So, you know, it's one of those where I think yesterday there was, let's call it, a show of unity in a sense that we were able to it looked as though, and maybe it was just the fact that there's caveats on the performance that we've already mentioned, but it looked as though we were able to put all of the bad feeling to one side and act as professionals and get ourselves forward to be able to play without any of the original constraints that we had based on the feelings with the head coach. Now I'm not entirely sure. I mean, obviously, there's just rumours coming out. I wasn't a fly on the wall to the clear the air talks or nor any of us. But I think there's still a couple of questions. Callum Wright was at Old Trafford yesterday, which was interesting. I'll say that. There's still the question of Dan Scar. And there's a lot there. So clearly not all is well in camp, but I think certainly if we were able to come out of that Sheffield Wednesday game and a few home truths were told by both the head coach and the players in the directions to exactly how they're feeling, then yeah, maybe we'll look back on that and say it's a good job we were able to get that out of the way. But yeah, there's still some rumblings and maybe it's just based on the performance that we think things have been cleared. Maybe if we hadn't got an equaliser and ends up losing yesterday, we'd assume otherwise. I don't know how much can be read into it. And as I say, that's because I'm not privy to the talks at all. Hopefully that's absolutely right and we're able to act as one going forward. But yeah, there's still a few concerning questions to answer for me, and only time will tell on those ones. And nothing I can say now will help.
There's no chance that Callum Wright does like an Andy Kellett then and goes off to Old Trafford to play for the reserves under Tom Huddleston.
Do you think he'd only get in the reserves, honestly?
I think Adam's accidentally started a rumour there.
Sounds like it. Sorry to bring up this comment again. Wait until you hear the next email that we've had in the inbox from TalkSport that I have to do a voiceover for. You might be getting 40% off your next HelloFresh box, let's put it that way. Can I just say
it's very unfair that Adam's getting so much pelters for his headset when you have come dressed as part of a X Factor runner-up boy band from the late 2000s and no one has commented on that at all.
Yeah, I know.
Incredible cream-on-cream jacket and shirt combination you've got going on.
Yeah, it's actually cream on white, and I just chuck this on from the car to get in running a bit late. But it doesn't really matter. I'm glad that you brought that up, though. Thanks, John. I look forward to it.
Is that the new name? Is it now the Cream and White podcast?
Very good. Very good. Where was I with the comments? John, there was a comment. Where was it? That popped up. Did Joe star it? I can't see it. He said he did, but I can't see it. We'll come back to you on that one. Sam, hi, everybody, who has a profile picture of Dr. Nick from The Simpsons, which I enjoyed. That was a good throwback. Will everybody be won over if good attacking performances continue, or have some people decided for good? I was angry, and I didn't see a good performance coming. And if we win the next game and play well, will people accept it and just move on?
To repeat a well-worn cliche that a week is a long time in politics, it's also a very long time in football. If, and this is not me for a minute saying I think it will happen, if we play well at home to Preston and win, if we put in a good gutsy performance at Norwich and get a draw, and if we then beat Bristol City at home playing well, 7 points to a nine. Who knows? Maybe we even get 9 out of 9. But if we get 7 points or more out of that available 9 and we play well in all 3 of them, you can bet your bottom dollar that a lot of people will change their views. And rightly so, because changing your views when you get more evidence is good. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But there is a lot of time in football for evidence to change. At the minute, I don't think Ian Foster is the right man, probably. Do I think that we've yet reached a threshold where we should sack him? No, I don't, because I think sacking a manager is a very big decision and not to be made lightly. Rory's just pointed out that's 3 weeks rather than 1, and that is a very fair comment. But still, you know, it's not a long time in the grand scheme of things, but it is in football. Look, this. Please don't interpret this as me saying, oh, everything's wonderful, it's all great, we're going to then go on this good run, because I don't think that will happen. But in answer to Aaron's question, if it did happen, would people turn their views around? Yeah, of course they would. And I think they'd be right to. I think you'd be, you know, stubborn not to. Whether I think that will actually happen or whether I think anything particularly close to it will happen, no. And again, just to get a lot of the comments saying that's a big if, it's not going to happen. Again, I just want to say, I'm not saying it will happen. I'm answering the very specific question of would people change their minds if it did happen? And that answer would be yes, in my opinion. I think we absolutely have to beat Preston. I did say that I don't think we've yet reached the threshold for sacking him, but what I'm nervous of is in that all of our good performances where we've actually looked a bit more attacking under Foster and or got a good result, we've then reverted back to type the game after. And I think that if we revert back to type against Preston and we fail to win that game, and Ryan Lowe is in front of the away end jumping and waving his arms about and all the rest of it, I think that threshold might have been reached. And I think it, in truth, probably will have been reached if that does happen. But again, as Richard replied in the comments, that's another one of the very big ifs that we're currently working with. I don't think it's too late for him to turn it round. The reason I'm not fully yet Foster out is that there have been some glimmers of hope where we have played like a serious outfit, like the kind of half an hour spell either side of halftime yesterday, like the Middlesbrough game, like the second half in the Cardiff game, like long spells of the Coventry game. It's not been all bad, but it has been mostly bad. And that's why I'm on the precipice of wanting a change of manager. But I'm still open to having my mind changed, as I hope everyone else should be open to having their mind changed. I don't predict it'll happen, but I'd love it if it did. If we go on a good run, I'd absolutely be delighted if we're playing well and winning a run of games. And I'd like to think everybody listening to this, unless we've got any, you know, Preston fans or whatever on, I'd like to think every Argyle fan listening to this would feel the same way. But I think it's a long way to go, and I don't, in truth, feel confident that will happen.
So Sam doing his best Kevin Keegan impression there. Would love it. Can I just say quickly, I've gone from being very defensive of Foster, much more so than anyone else here last week, to probably about where Sam is on the cusp of it now. And I just want to say quickly, nothing about this is fair. It really isn't. I don't really think it's good practice to be going around sacking managers, especially rookie ones, after only a few weeks on the job. I also think he's been, all the caveats we mentioned last in the week, right after the Sheffield Wednesday pod. He's been thrown into the deep end, very difficult situation, lots of squad turnover, hugely charged fixture schedule, not a lot of time on the grass with the players. It's really, really difficult. And I do sympathize with those who say, just changing your manager isn't going to have an impact. Also, I think that if QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, as I said in the week, hadn't gone on these mad runs of form, we wouldn't really be anywhere near the relegation zone and people would be grumbling about the performance level. But ultimately, a point at Blackburn would look fine rather than a huge missed opportunity if we were 8, 9, 10 points above it. And we're not. And not only are we not, but pretty much, every club in the bottom half of the table still is right there in that relegation mire with us. So it's kind of an unusual situation. But I think that unusual situation, while it is a mitigating factor for Foster and one he can very legitimately point to, also just raises the stakes enormously to the point where you have to ask, not does he deserve more time necessarily at this point, or does he deserve, a much fairer shake or a summer to kind of implement his philosophy and bring in his own players and staff and whatever. I think he absolutely, categorically does deserve all of those things. You at some point you have to say, is that too big a risk in the short term, or is there a less risky course of action we can take that involves making a change? And a week ago I'd have said, I judge him on Sheffield Wednesday and Blackburn, but so far the results have actually not been that bad, even if some of the performances have. Those are two very bad results that we've just had, in my opinion, in the circumstances. And so I think Sam is right, basically, to say that next week is probably a must-win game, because I'd be concerned about performances that show a little bit of improvement week on week, but still don't pick up results, kind of leading to a position where we're sleepwalking into going down, which, for those with medium-term memories will recall is something that we have done before and didn't make a change until it was too late. So, unfortunately, I think this becomes a very difficult decision the club will have to make. But I did want to just jump in and say, I actually don't think this is fair on him at all. I think if it does, lead to the point where we need to make a change, it will be a sad thing. As much as being, a cause for great celebration or whatever.
Yeah, we've had quite a few.
He's in the last chance saloon. That's the word. I think he's in the last chance saloon. And as one of the comments, which we'll come on to, I think the club have already taken some action above his head in appointing this coach. I do. And I think this is really the last roll of the dice to see if we can make it work.
Yeah, we've had quite a few questions on the potential replacement who left Aberdeen. We might get onto that in a minute. But Adam, quickly, not quickly, up to you. The others don't answer quickly, so you can do what you want, I suppose. Carl Barnard has asked, Can we read into anything regarding what Cooper said post-match about the style of play and that he'd much prefer playing attacking football even if we lose trying?
Yeah, and I think that's possibly a signal of these clear the air talks that I was recently discussing and something that's ultimately, I don't really know what happens. I think it's a signal very much of what the players prefer. And if Cooper's confident enough to come out and say that to the press, then it's perhaps an indication that that is the freedom that the players are hopefully going to be given. Now, I think as with everything that we've discussed about this game, and as with everything with regards to how the individuals have been and what they've said or how they've played, I need to see the same sort of thing next weekend. Because if next weekend we end up going back into the shell, then I'll say, oh, well, then those comments from Cooper clearly meant nothing. If we see another display of football where we're at the very least on the front foot, then perhaps it is a sign. I'm confident enough at the minute that there have been those home truths mentioned, and Cooper's comments there do certainly feel like they are part of that. But as non-committal as it is, we will have to wait and see just how much weight they hold. And what I will say is that we're at a point of the last chance saloon. Totally agree with what Sam said there. We're also at a point of quite significant opportunity. It's the first time Ryan Lowe is going to be back at Home Park. And I know it's something that we're going to explore the Preston game later on, but this is huge in many ways for Foster. If we are to go out and put a similar sort of display in with attacking football and win that game, that is going to be huge. So it's going back to those comments. If we do see that, and particularly if we see that in this Preston game against Ryan Lowe just before the international break, yeah, I'll be delighted. But if it goes the other way, yeah, I think we've crossed that threshold. So we'll see is the easiest way to put it.
Why are we waving?
Sam and I had a bet
at the moment, Darren.
Sam and I had a bet that we could get you to wave at nobody.
No, the comment for those of you who are listening on the audio only medium has access to wave to Mavis and Macy, who never miss a show. So,
thank you so much
for your loyalty to both of them. You've not only got a wave, but also a shout out.
Oh, lovely. I didn't read that. A few of the comments have touched on. Jack, we'll be wrapping up soon, hopefully. A few of the comments have already touched on Simon Ireland, who's joined us. Sam, we've been crying out for more coaching staff to help Mr. Foster, but this appointment has raised a few eyebrows due to his lack of connections to Foster, Dewsnip and Co. Before we were, the fan base were complaining it was jobs for mates, and now this guy's got no connections and they're complaining there's no connections. What do we make of Simon Ireland's appointment?
Clearly a sign that the faith of the executive level of the club, whilst not completely gone in Foster, has certainly been shaken. I think if you read Ian Foster's belated comments at that, it was very obvious this wasn't a Foster hire. Now, I've had this put to me by somebody who I was chatting to offline that, you know, maybe that's just to the extent of the fact that the head coach doesn't hire coaches. The director of football hires coaches. And that's, you know, to an extent, I get that. But as with player recruitment, the head coach should have a good say in it and he should have a reasonable degree of buy-in. There were a lot of rumours that have been circling around of, you know, not even only rumours. Foster actually outright said it in his interview that he wasn't in any rush to hire a coach. That's what he himself said. And now we've gone and hired one. So that says to me that after the unsettlement of the Ipswich game and the Sheffield Wednesday game, there's been a discussion. There's a lot of talks, which I don't think have ever been confirmed as having happened, but there's a lot of speculation that on Wednesday they had a big clear the air meeting. And you know what? I can believe that did happen, fully believe it happened for a number of reasons. One, because of the hire of the coach. Two, because of Foster's media handling since then being certainly better than it was before. Still not great. That daft comment about Man United and Chelsea certainly didn't help him. But that one comment aside, that the overall press conference in which that comment was made was 10 times better in terms of his attitude, his body language, the way he spoke was much better. And obviously then also the performance being better, not perfect, but better. All of that does lead me to believe that there's been some kind of clear the air talks, maybe a bit of a weight been lifted. Since the Hillsborough, not that everything is rosy in the garden, but maybe that everybody is more committed to pulling together and putting their differences aside than perhaps they once were. So I think that is probably true. And I think that part of that is disappointment of Simon Ireland. My cynical head says that he's been hired because there's absolutely no risk to hiring him. Because if you do get rid of Foster, we'll still need another coach to work with Dewsnip and Nance Gaville. Or if we were to bring in another manager who may have a house somewhere across the water in Cornwall who didn't want Simon Ireland, he's... sorry, I'm just chuckling at one of the comments there. If we were to hire a new manager or head coach who didn't want Simon Ireland, his contract only runs to the end of the season. So it would be very easy for us to just get rid of him after a week or two of work if we so chose to do so. So, you know... I'm not convinced that this means that everything's perfect, and certainly I'm not convinced that Foster is the one who's chosen this appointment, but maybe they'll find a way of sort of cobbling it together and making it work. I don't know.
Oh, go on, John. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. Well, he's not that big. One last dance, Sharon. John Biggs. Why do the same people who complain about Foster's negative tactics keep calling for Warnock to come in? That would be a turn up for the books, wouldn't it?
Very fair point, I dare say.
Well,
I
think it's a fair point, but I also think it's a wrong one. And I think there would be two reasons for people to call for that while at the same time complaining about Foster's negative tactics, perceived negative tactics, which is, number one, I think it's not true to say Neil Warnock is a negative manager. I think he's a pragmatist. And I think what that means is he identifies the strength in a group that he goes into or where they can improve and coaches them to basically do that when he's in a firefighter type situation. And if that's Huddersfield last season, didn't watch a lot of their games when he sort of kept them up dramatically. I actually don't think they were like, and they scored quite a few goals, if I remember correctly. I don't think they were like a hugely, hugely negative side. But, you know, that's a team that's got quite a lot of big players, quite a lot of kind of defensive leaders. It would make sense to kind of, you know, pull the troops together and kind of go for a more defensive discipline style. But I don't think it follows, you know, that Warnock, if he were to come in to take our job, would look at our squad and the strength that our squad has and say, you know what, lads, let's just sit deep for 90 minutes, try and get a 0-0. Very clearly, you know, I think that our squad is not set up to do that. And as Sam has said on previous pods, you know, you could agree or disagree on whether Foster is deliberately trying to be negative. And I personally don't think he is. I think he's just been more negative than Schumacher, which is, you know, about as positive in terms of attacking players you could possibly get. So it looks negative by comparison. But Sam has said, you know, like, it's not only about it's not only about kind of the tactical choice side of it. It's about saying that actually we have looked better when we have gone and played attacking football under Foster than when we have played in a bit more of a cautious manner. And I think Warnock would be capable of identifying that. I think he would look at kind of unchaining those attacking assets who look a little bit low on confidence, rusty, frozen out, you know, not playing in quite the right system at the moment. And I think he would try and unleash their potential. So that's the first thing about it. The second reason is that even if Warnock did come in and play defensive football and tighten us up, I think he'd be more effective at doing it because I think he's a better, more experienced coach than Ian Foster. Now, that's not to write Foster off and say he's not going to have a good managerial career, be it with us or someone else. And I certainly don't kind of think the bloke is as totally useless as many people say, but Warnock is probably the best manager in the Football League. And just in terms of, like, you know, the longevity and the proof being in the pudding of just how long he has been doing it for and how much success he has almost always had. So that, you know, I don't think it's inconsistent to criticize Foster for negative football and also want Warnock to come in. And I may have said something to that effect in frustration yesterday. I think now, you know, after the discussions we've had about Foster's future, I'd be in a position of thinking that particularly is premature. But, you know, certainly Warnock now being available again does kind of put a different complexion on the idea of bringing in potentially a new manager on a short-term deal before the end of the season, given that we know, you know, A, his links to the club, and B, that he has got clubs very recently out of a kind of similar, not even a similar predicament, but a much worse one, actually. So I think those calls are reasonable, even if there are also reasonable grounds to not want that to happen.
I, too, look forward to Sol Bamba coming in and taking us to the Premier League via the playoffs, obviously. He doesn't often go up automatically, does he? It's normally a dramatic playoff win at Wembley, if I remember rightly. I look forward to that. Is there anything to add? Or should we go to bed? No, that's good. That's a positive silence. Thanks, everybody, again, for watching along live or listening back on your podcast platforms. Make sure to like, follow us on, you know, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, the TikTok. There's some more Sam Down content on the TikTok now, featuring a few tequila rosés. Make sure you subscribe to us on your podcast platforms, etc. Subscribe, like, and all that good stuff on YouTube. I think that's everything. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers, all.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, everyone, for watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.